Development committee to order. At some point, the staff is going, the pages will be handing out the donuts. Hopefully, they've got some napkins or something, because I forgot to grab them. We have some donuts to celebrate his three-week parental leave. But if we had paid family leave, he could take 6 or 12 or 24 weeks.
We get 6.
Huh?
We get 6. I'm taking 3 now and 3 in the sun. Spoiler alert.
Okay. You want to vote for what bill now?
I just want to get my budget out. House file 2567, Representative Purr. Do we have a form?
Make sure the little circles line up.
Okay, we do actually have a quorum. And Representative Gunther, I know you were checking out the minutes a little earlier. Any changes or additions or subtractions to the minutes? Any comments? Seeing that, all in favor of approving the minutes from March 26th, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
We now have minutes.
That's the
wrong day. What day is it? Hey, this is my bill. What are you doing with my bill?
So I'm going to call up the minutes again.
One of them.
And move that March 26th in the second line being changed to March 27th. All those in favor of that change signify by saying aye.
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 We now have minutes. All right. Representative Herr. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. And I do just want to apologize to your committee. I did not bring treats, but I saw that you had your own treats. So my apologies for not bringing. I will bring some treats for all of you.
Cover for the freshmen.
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members.
Done now, right? No treats? See you later. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before you is House File 2567. This is the governor's bill. This is an economic development bill that is requesting appropriation of funds to make workforce training and entrepreneurship investments to help close the state's opportunity gap for Minnesotans of color. In recognition of Minnesota's deep and persistent disparities, the momentum that has been created around addressing those disparities, this bill makes investments in some of the direct appropriations made in the prior biennial budget to continue this work. This proposal increases funding to the Youth at Work Competitive Grant Program and adding funding for additional grantee support. Total appropriation for the biennium is $24,779,000. Subdivision 2 identifies how these funds will be allocated and to which organizations. I'm just going to briefly state the organizations in case, because there is a long bill and maybe not everyone's had a chance to look through it, but it's appropriate funds to Neighborhood Development Center, Metropolitan Economic Development Association, White Earth Nation, Enterprise Minnesota, Youth at Work Competitive Grant Program, YWCA, Emerge Community Development, Minneapolis Foundation, Twin Cities Rise, Latino Communities United in Service, Department of Education in partnership with the Northwest Indian Community Development Center, Ujamaa Place, Construction Careers Foundation, and Youth Prize. Chair Mahoney, I do have a couple of testifiers here today. I see that you have 9 bills to be heard, and many of these groups have already been in front of this committee. So in the interest of time, I'd like to give this opportunity for those who haven't been in front of your committee. So with your permission, I'd like to call representatives from Emerge, CLUES, White Earth Nation, and Somali Economic Development to join me at the testifiers table, if that's okay.
Yes.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jay, can I grab that chair right
there? Good morning.
Good morning.
Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. Our thanks to Representative Herr and Representative Shong and Chair Mahoney for having us this morning. My name is Ruby Lee. I'm president of CLUS, Latino Communities United in Service. With me are Jennifer Mendoza, CLUS Career Development Navigator and Community Liaison in Wilmer. And I would like to just begin by you do have packages. We provided packages of the results of the programs that we've been doing. Just for context, I want to say that CLUS has been in existence for over 40 years, and it is Minnesota's largest Latino-led organization with offices in Minneapolis, St. Paul, and now Wilmer in Austin, Minnesota. We serve over 10,000 people annually in direct services. Because of the appropriation that we received, we were able to start the Latino Economic and Employment and Workforce Initiative. With the support of the funding from the legislature, we were able to serve over 3,600 people. We enrolled close to 300 adults in workforce and skills training in carpentry, drywall, painting, welding, and certified nursing assistance programs. We achieved completion rate of 72%. And we also follow the participants with wraparound supports for over a year and provided employment with averaging over $15 an hour. With the funding, we also help provide internships, paid workforce internships for Latino youth, who are today 45% of the Latino community. We ask your support for House File 1803 to leverage the work that we started not only in the Twin Cities area but in greater Minnesota. As we are the only Latino-led agency, not only in the metro area but in greater Minnesota, the supports are very small, and we need your support to continue to expand our work. With me today, I want to share some time with my colleague, Jennifer Mendoza, who will talk to you a little bit about the work that we've been doing in Wilmer.
My role as the Community Development Navigator and Community Liaison is to help low-income Latino individuals thrive and contribute to our local needs in the workforce. We, as Ms. Ruby said, we have services also available in Austin, Minnesota. Our individuals are very dedicated, and this has come through in showing that individuals from the surrounding areas are willing to travel 45 minutes each way to attend our courses in order to raise their income, their education level, and their possibilities for employment. We have many partners in our rural areas, including our college, large employers, and it is a blessing to have the ability to partner with our economic development resources in our area, as well as the businesses, in order to learn what's available. Because our areas are rural, we have a definite need to fill those positions with individuals who are already there. The truth is a lot of people don't leave the big city to come to the rural area. It's more of the rural individuals leaving to go to the big city. So we're hoping with giving individuals more prosperity in their hometowns, we're able to retain some of those. Yesterday it was brought up that a lot of Latino individuals do not finish their high school education, and I feel that one way that we can address this is through the education of the parents, because many of them did not obtain their degrees when they were in high school, and therefore when the parents are able to see the importance, it drips down to the family members. For instance, I had a 41-year-old woman who came in and took our certified nursing course. She completed that course, became employed. Prior, she had not been employed. She had been doing field work, and she actually decided to invest in herself, and now she's working for a step up from the certified nursing assistant to the trained medication administration certification there in our area, and it's very humbling to me that now I see her daughter in our course or enrolling in our course. So I'm very hopeful that it continues to raise the bar for education and to retain individuals in our rural area so that we can continue to be prosperous.
Did you, maybe I missed it, but did you identify yourself for the tape?
My name is Jennifer Mendoza. I apologize. Oh, yes. So my name is Jennifer Mendoza, and I am the Career Development Navigator and Community Liaison for Wilmer, Minnesota.
Thank you.
Yes, for the CLUES agency.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Wabashki Mayingan Indigenakaz Mongan Dodam Gawa Babagani Kagan Dunjuba. Alan Roy, Secretary Treasurer of White Earth Nation. I am Alan Roy. I am the Secretary Treasurer of White Earth Nation, and I appreciate the time this morning, Mr. Chair, to speak on behalf of White Earth Nation pertaining to this bill in front of you. I'm here to ask for support related to the White Earth Economic Integrated Business Development System. In 2016, White Earth was part of the disparity bill that had got authorized, and we had received about $500,000 for startup entrepreneur programs on the reservation, and with $125,000 ongoing. We have been working closely with DEED, the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development, over the years to try to get that implemented. The project is a collaboration between Mahnomen County, Mahnomen City, and the tribe. It's something that we feel is very novel and unique. When we look at the statistics of unemployment and the ability to start businesses on reservations, the challenges are quite difficult. And so we know that we're going to have to work together with the county, city, state, and the tribe to overcome this. Now, we're faced with, in our part of the state, we have about 22% unemployment. When we look at males aged 16 to 25, it's over 40%. Females, same age group, it's over 30%. And so what we want, what we're focused on, if you look at our part of the state, because we're rural, so we have different challenges than other parts of the state, such as Minneapolis, St. Paul. We got to get the trades, all right? We got to get the truck drivers. We got to get CDL programs started up. These are the types of businesses that we want to help our members and non-members start. This program is just not for Native Americans. It's for all our residents up there, which is why we've taken a collaborative approach to this with the county and the city. And so I think that at the end of the day, what we're asking for is reauthorization of this because we haven't fully implemented it. Once we get it implemented, we'll be able to report back on some of the outcomes and outputs to report back on success. Pending your questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I think I do have two other testifiers who said they'd be here from Emerge and someone speaking of Somali economic development, but I don't see. Okay, come on in. We can just wait here and they can ask us questions. Yeah. Come on in.
Well, why don't you give that one of the pages? Would you like to hand that out?
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Herr, for this invitation. I'm Mike Winham, the President and CEO of Emerge Community Development. Emerge is an organization that for a long time has been working on economic opportunities in Minneapolis neighborhoods and the broader Twin Cities. Here, on behalf of a partnership project that we have led via the Unity Opportunity Collaborative, it's an effort of Emerge, Sabathany Community Center, Stair Step Foundation, and the Minneapolis Urban League, focused on collaborative efforts to address employment, income, and educational disparities impacting Minnesotans of African descent and other communities of color. Building on the long-term experience and trusted presence of our organizations, we offer a range of career services and educational outreach in geographically key areas of North, South, and Cedar Riverside communities. These Twin Cities neighborhoods have among the lowest household incomes and the highest levels of unemployment. They're the ground zero of racial economic disparities in our state. Our approach is to meet people where they are, to provide holistic employment services, to assess skills, interests, readiness, and to counsel and support progress toward employment and careers. We provide access and navigation to career pathway trainings in manufacturing, IT, construction, and transportation and logistics. and we operate transitional employment training for those that need it most, mainly formerly incarcerated adults. And we also work on job placement assistance and retention support beyond training to employment. And then another very important component is outreach that seeks to link adults to who lack a high school diploma. And we talked about this issue last night, the glaring gap in high school diplomas and people lacking that credential in our community, and how this is a very significant barrier to people making progress in income and jobs. And we work in partnership with public education resources in our community, mainstream adult basic education, to connect people back to school. And from July 16th of March 2018, our equity-funded programs produced the following results. More than 1,800 individuals were served. 256 became re-enrolled in high school diploma program. 1,007 people received pre-employment training and skills. 341 people achieved industry-recognized credential, and 476 people obtained a job placement at an average wage of $12.65. 58 people worked in paid training, transitional employment, and earning wages of $336,000 plus. And overall, an estimated $8.7 million in annual wages were obtained as a result of these efforts overall. Our partners are currently organized to relaunch this work with DEED, and as we speak, making updates to work plan and technical modifications that are anticipated. Our work ahead will seek to continue much of this effort. However, We see this as a deeper dive into community and engaging people who are not being connected to programs and systems, and which is part of what this effort is about. We are also continuing to advance our work on career pathways and reach looking for the best career high-growth opportunities to connect people fairly rapidly in a fast-track sort of way, while we continue to connect people to mainstream GED resources and utilize transitional employment as a proven model for formerly incarcerated people. We're poised to carry this work forward in the coming biennium. We hope you'll continue to support it. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Representative Herr.
Mr. Chair, I think this is all I have for testifiers that are within the bill. I am aware of other groups that are here who are not within the bill that may want to speak. I don't know if you want to take questions first for those who are here, or however you want to proceed, sir.
What would your other testifiers be adding to the...
From what I understand, it's voices that might be missing from this particular bill, Mr. Chair.
That's fine. Why don't you bring them down right now, and then we'll have questions.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair.
Then
I'll give you the bad news.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning.
Good morning, Yajong. Mr. Chair, Representative Herr, and representatives of this committee. My name is Mai Mua. I am the Chief Operating Officer at HAP, Hmong American Partnership, and I'm here today to represent the 25,000 people of the communities that we serve. Let me just give you a little bit of some information about HAP. We were founded in 1990, servicing a community-based organization servicing primarily the Hmong, Southeast Asian, and immigrant and refugee communities. We serve over 25,000 people a year. Of those 25,000 people, we serve about 6,000 people in workforce development and economic development activities. Workforce and economic development activities are the core of what we do at HAP. In 2018, we served over 6,000 people. And right now, as you all know, we have a workforce shortage in the state of Minnesota. The state demographer estimates that there are 238,000 jobs openings between 2014 and 2024 in health, hospitality, IT, and transportation. Those are all areas in which HAP has custom jobs training and workforce development activities. Among people are the highest number of Southeast Asians in the state of Minnesota. The Southeast Asian population is also the highest gross population in the last few decades. In 2010 to 2015, there was a 22% growth of Southeast Asians in Minnesota, meaning 48,000 people were added. The state demographer estimates that the Southeast Asian population continues to be the highest percentage of growth in the state of Minnesota. Why is this important? It is imperative at this time because we have a workforce shortage, and the Southeast Asian population is the highest population of growth, including the Hmong. We need to, as HAP, we did receive equity grant for a Southeast Asian equity bill, so we are a current grantee and in the governor's bill. However, we need to be able to better direct the resources of this bill to the communities and the organizations that can better serve the cultural communities in which our growth is highest grossing. The API community, is one of the communities in which it is so important to be able to support. And we would ask that in this bill, the funding also goes to an API community-based organization that services the community and reflects the cultural and linguistic needs of those community members. In our experience at HAP, when we received Southeast Asian Equity Grant through a competitive process, we recognized that some of our API community members and organizations could not even access that grant. So as an example, CAPI, the second largest API agency in the state of Minnesota, received an equity grant in their first year. In their second year, they did not receive that same grant. How is it possible that the second largest API organization servicing API community members could not get a Southeast Asian competitive grant award? Secondly, when in our experience around the DEED equity grants, when the money is funneled to DEED, DEED has certain eligibility requirements and program requirements that then become challenges and barriers to us as organizations servicing our own communities. So as an example, if our work plan changes and the outcome changes in terms of our program design, we then take time to redo that budget and that program design, and that can take up to 90 days to do that. Our community members cannot afford to have a 90-day period to have a budget modification and redesign of a program. Third, there are organizations, there were 12, that received direct appropriation from the governor's bill to support the work of their own communities, many of them who are here in this room today. These organizations, because they got direct appropriation, like CLUES, Emerge, Ujamaa Place, they were able to have the flexibility and nimbleness to be able to design their programs in a way that met the cultural and linguistic needs of their communities. HAP received, through a competitive process, a Southeast Asian grant that had to meet the eligibility and requirements of DEED. That significantly becomes a barrier to us designing programs that effectively move our communities from poverty to prosperity. Mr. Chair, Representative Herr, and members of the committee, I'm here today to be the voice for the 25,000 people that we serve that was missed in this equity appropriation. Last night, we spoke and was at the Senate hearing for the same bill, and Senator Bobby Champion said this was a gross error on record. Thank you.
Thank you. You have another testifier? I believe Adam Hansen wished to say a few words. Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Adam Hansen. I'm with the Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. Our contractor members and the men and women that they employ throughout the state are part of the 70% of the construction industry in the state that choose to be merit shop craft professionals. They build our schools, our medical facilities, our restaurant and retail establishments, multifamily housing, clean energy projects like solar and wind throughout the state. Our contractors have registered apprenticeship programs with the state, some of them through the Federal Department of Labor, and others have customized training set, or training programs that they administer themselves. ABC and our contractor members don't receive a single dollar of state funds for either our training programs or our outreach programs with other community groups. We do have concerns about one portion of this bill that allocates $2 million to the Construction Careers Foundation. Now, we don't object to promoting careers in construction. We do that every day, and so do our contractors. What we do object to with that funding and with that group in particular is the lack of access that other like-minded construction groups and trade associations and contractors have to that program. We have not been contacted by the Construction Careers Foundation to be a partner with their group or to work hand-in-hand with them to promote careers in construction, nor are our apprenticeship programs through DLI listed on their website. When you go to their site and you click on the links to their various trade programs, the only links that a young Minnesotan would find are links to union halls and their affiliated programs. There are no job postings and there are no contractors listed if somebody's interested in a job in construction. And now, considering that 70% of Minnesota's construction workforce chooses to work for merit shop contractors, it doesn't quite seem right that they would be excluding the vast majority of folks looking to get into the construction industry who does not want to join a union program. Nowhere in the funding request this year is a reporting requirement for the group to show how many young Minnesotans were contacted, how many were placed into programs, how many were placed into jobs, or broken down in those categories where Minnesotans and communities of color reached out to as well. I think it would be helpful for this committee, the legislature, and the taxpayers to know where that $2 million is going. How is it used? Is it for a website? Is it for full-time employees? Is it for training? Where does that money go? This $2 million request this year is in addition to the almost $1 million for a similar program for helmets to hard hats, as well as almost $500,000 in training programs for pre-apprenticeship programs for various union trades. In previous testimony in this committee and in other discussions with these groups, we're always told that the building trades don't actually request funds and don't have public funds for their training programs, but these funding requests tell a different story. So I'd respectfully ask the committee to look deeper into this funding request, ask some of those questions I raised about where's the money going, who's impacted, how does it fit in with this equity bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. I think that ends the testimony, or the list, the requested testimony. Are there any other people who would care to speak to this particular bill, pro or con? Good morning.
Good morning.
I think I saw you last night.
Yeah, you did, Mr. Chairman. I will be very brief, and just to say that MEDA is in this bill. We have met and or will exceed all of the goals that were established under the previous equity bill for businesses of color, and that we really believe that in addition to this, we also need capital for entrepreneurs. So with that, many of you heard what I had to say last night. Supporting entrepreneurs of color is Minnesota's secret sauce for future prosperity because they create the jobs and economic opportunity for communities throughout the state. We really appreciate any support you can provide, MEDA and NDC, that are within this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for any of the testifiers?
Ms. Dinkin, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear him introduce himself.
Oh.
My name is Gary Cunningham. I'm president and CEO of MEDA.
Any questions? Any? Seeing none. I have one comment. This must be an old copy of the bill prior to when the governor switched all of the money from a split of workforce development monies and general funds. Unfortunately, when he did that, he drew the workforce development funds down to less than $1 million at the end of the year. which leaves no cushion. So I'm giving you a warning, those that support this bill, that it's going to be tough to get to $24 million. It's going to be very, very hard because workforce dollars are meant to get people back to work once they have left or been laid off. And with the governor moving $12 million from general fund to workforce, there's not $12 million extra in the workforce development fund right now. So, seeing no other questions. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Representative Hurd for bringing this bill forward. It is a good bill. I just think and reflect back to when I was first elected to the House of Representatives and sworn in 2011, the lack of diversity that I saw within the House of Representatives in supporting communities of color to really have a leg up, to be prepared, to be ready, to be trained to go into the workforce. And so, and also to bring the perspective of those communities into this body. So we have moved and we have grown from those early beginnings, but we are still just at the tip of what is needed to really ensure that at the state level that we are seeing community of colors, that we are investing in communities of color, and we see them as an asset to our communities and our state thriving. And it really takes communities of color coming forward with proposals to create this process where we are validating the need of communities of color. But it also is important that we as legislators know that there have been barriers in place that really prevented these opportunities that we need and see and want for everybody in the state of Minnesota. So I just want to thank the organizations that are coming forward, that are doing such good work, and thank you for leading on this bill.
Representative Zong.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Hurd, for carrying this bill. I'm proud to be a co-author of this bill with you. And I also want to thank the folks from Clues who actually set up the time and met up with me and shared with me the work that they're doing, being an institution based on the East Side, to learn about the impact that they've had on the communities that we serve. It really warms my heart because you know that my background, I came from Hennepin County in workforce development, and to hear of the work that they're doing, the impact for future generations, I think this is a really good bill. So I appreciate this, Representative Hurd. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Seeing no other. Any final comments, Representative Hurd?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing testimony today and spending time on this bill. I mean, Representative Moran did a really great job of already summarizing sort of why this is important, and so I won't repeat what she had already said because she said it so well, but I do just want to reemphasize the fact that the data shows us, right, the disparities that exist for workforce development, unemployment, vocational and skills trainings, that there is large disparities, and some of these disparities are the worst for our African-American population and our indigenous populations. And so I really appreciate the committee, and I would ask for your support for House File 2567. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no other comments, I will renew my motion to lay House File 2567 over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Moran, 1931. Yeah, I was wondering when those would come. Why don't you give one to him first?
Should have sold tickets for that one.
Thank you. Representative Moran, you have 10 minutes.
Good morning.
I will announce right now, every bill coming forward from now on has 10 minutes, and then we're going to vote.
We're going to be efficient with our time. Okay. Mr. Chair, I think I want to move House File 1931 to be for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Yep.
Okay, thank you. So, Mr. Chair and members, I want to thank you for hearing. I have two really important bills today that will support a great organization that has been serving my community and the city of St. Paul in our state for a long, long time, which is LifeTrack. LifeTrack was established in 1948 to respond to the needs of individuals affected by polio and military service during World War II. Today, LifeTrack serves Minnesota families striving to overcome the effects of generational poverty and the challenges associated with physical and mental disabilities. LifeTrack works in three major areas. One, child and family services, which includes a therapeutic preschool and home visiting program serving families ages 3 to 5 who has experienced trauma due to the effect of poverty. They work with the deaf and hard of hearing, serving families and children across the state when a child is born or becomes deaf, providing training in communication methods and other supports of the family and child. And then last, employment services. They target to meet the needs of hard-to-employ individuals, the objectives being to reduce or eliminate dependency on government or other financial support. House File 1931 focuses on LifeTrack efforts in the workforce development area. With me to explain further, I have two testifiers here from LifeTrack, and they are more versed in the great work that LifeTrack does and the need that LifeTrack and the services provide to St. Paul and our state and our families.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Representative Moran, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for hearing us. My name is Curtis Knudsen. I'm the Executive Director of LifeTrack. I'm here to talk about our employment services today. Our goal, as Representative Moran noted, is to reduce or eliminate dependence on government assistance or other financial supports. We do that by training and placing people into high-paying jobs, such as commercial truck driving. And we do this, we select industries like truck driving because there is such a high demand due to worker shortage. We find high levels of success in placement. Often our clients are placed in jobs before they're even done with their training. Following some demographic data I'd like to share with you. These are numbers for 2018, although they are consistent from year to year for us. We served 1,409 individuals with some form of job preparation assistance. That's an increase of 300 from our prior three-year average, so we are growing. 1,042 were placed into jobs. 499 received a certificate or some other formal credential. Average wage earned was $13.13 per hour. And here's the big thing. The 12-month job retention rate was 81%. We're very proud of that. Of the people served, 69% are female, 76% are people of color, 100% lived at or below the federal poverty level, 20% are refugees. That's down 9% from our prior three-year average. 27% have some form of disability. That's up 5%. And 29% have criminal backgrounds. We have a number of accomplishments that I'd like to note for your benefit. Nationally, LifeTrack job placement and retention ranks in the top 15%. As determined by the National Benchmarking Project. And on the state level, there's something called the Self-Support Index. It is a report that measures a client's self-sufficiency 3 years after they exit a program. For the past 5 years, LifeTrack has been in the top 10% of all organizations analyzed in Minnesota. LifeTrack has a continuous service record providing welfare to work services since 1993 and has been a Minnesota Family Investment Program provider in Hennepin County from 2000 to the present. In 2015, LifeTrack received the City of Minneapolis Employment and Training Service Partner for Adults Award. That award reflects an outstanding demonstration of best practices and effective partnerships. It also reflects success in assisting people of color move from poverty into jobs that provide a sustainable living wage. Based on the Department of Human Services MFIP Assistance Standards Table, we did some calculations. We do this every year. We have estimated conservatively that our Welfare to Work program saved the state of Minnesota more than $1.07 million last year by helping 91 clients exit entirely from the welfare system. So those are the statistics. I'd like to turn it over now to my colleague, Liberty Mickelson, to talk about how we do what we do.
Mr. Speaker, good morning.
Please identify yourself for the tape.
My name is Liberty Mickelson, and I'm the Manager of Employment and Training at LifeTrack. I've been at LifeTrack for 11 years, and LifeTrack has a strong community presence for many years. We currently serve people in all seven metro counties and across Minnesota. People walk in every day and inquire about our services because they've had a family member or friend talk positively about LifeTrack services. This is how we serve our community, one person at a time, one family at a time. This is important. I've worked at other workforce development nonprofits, and it was through that experience that I discovered why LifeTrack is unique. We have a holistic ground-up approach. This is not how things are done everywhere. At other places, clients are quickly analyzed, they're thrown into large groups, they're thrown into a job club, they're told to show up at this time. And at LifeTrack, we treat clients as individuals, assuming that everybody has their own needs, their own goals, and their own desires. I believe that this is why we have one of the highest long-term success rates. I think that this is a direct result of that personal, holistic approach. It's more than just creating a resume or finding a job. For us, it's connecting parents with their children's school counselor or the weekend food program. It's about helping clients find better housing, helping parents sign up for school conferences, or coaching clients on how to interview a potential child care provider. We weave those life skills and self-advocacy into our employment services, which is why we call our staff coaches. Here's the way that we work. We operate our programs from a model that's called the LifeTrack Achievement Zone. All of our coaches are trained in the Achievement Zone, in its philosophy and its use. The Achievement Zone is a tool that allows coaches to identify and celebrate client successes, even the smallest. An example of a small but significant success would be that after we researched child care centers with a client, the client contacted one of the centers and inquired about openings for their child's age group. This may seem really insignificant to you guys, but our clients are not accustomed to self-sufficiency and problem solving, and so we help them develop those life skills. Celebrations of small successes are important for the people that we serve because we find that for them to be successful at work or training, they need someone to identify for them and remind them of their strongest attributes in order to build their confidence. We mentor clients and teach them those kinds of skills.
If I could interrupt here, I'm trying to keep on schedule, yes. So if you could bring it to a close.
Yes, definitely. So what we'd like to do is we'd like to continue to ensure that all of our clients attain a customer service credential from one of our MNSCU partners. We've got multiple partners. We do that on site at LifeTrack. It's a class that they attend. We'd like to teach the clients how to understand their criminal background checks, connect them to resources to initiate corrections to their background check, and coach them how to communicate the positive changes that they've made during an interview. We want to troubleshoot with clients and employers to identify problems and barriers to success so that they can stay employed, and then also connect clients with community resources for housing, home furnishings, transportation, work uniforms, work boots. We'd really like to keep this momentum going, and we want to continue lifting up our community by helping people access this training and employment.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers? Is there anyone who would care to testify on LifeTrack for or against this particular bill? Seeing none, do you care to renew your motion?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to renew my motion to have House File 1931 laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. I just want to say You heard the stats. When we wanted to invest in something at the state level that works, this is what LifeTrack does. Please support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a second bill here.
Yes.
1933.
1933, yes. 2 minutes.
And this one, would you care to speak to it? And then we'll move on that one also.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair. So House File 1931 will go a long way to help LifeTrack take care of the necessary deferred maintenance issues with their 100-year-old building. LifeTrack is on the Green Line in St. Paul. It is on the bus line. It has a history of being connected to the community where clients knows the building. They, you know, folks come in because of word of mouth, because they know and they trust the work that comes out of LifeTrack. And so it's a beacon in the community that we want to continue to see and support in St. Paul that does work not only in St. Paul but across the state of Minnesota for children and families and communities. But the building is a 100-year-old building. They're looking at the windows, tuck pointing, electrical works. All of this is needed to ensure the health and safety of the clients and staff that rely on LifeTrack. Often you find that donors are reluctant to pay for these items, and LifeTrack serves our state with their services. So that's why I'm asking this committee to help with some of their costs. Thank you.
Are there any questions for the representative? Any questions? All those in favor of, yeah, we're laying this bill and 1931 over. So, but are there any questions? Seeing none. Your bills are laid over at this particular time. We'll see if we can fit them into the budget.
All right. Thank you so much.
Is Representative Carlson here? Is Representative Mariani here? Well, how about if we move up Representative Poppy? Is Representative Zong here?
Here's
Representative Poppy. All right.
We have a winner. Yeah, I
see.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I go ahead?
Good that you're here. You may as well go ahead.
Thank you so much. Thanks
I'll
for
move,
hearing
I'll
us.
I'll move your
moving
House File
up.
1553 for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. This House File 1553, last 2 years ago, we were able to get a pilot project to do an experiment about how this could work in communities of fewer than 5,000 people and to do an asset-based development approach to communities in greater Minnesota. And I have with me today people who are greatly involved in this process, and so I will let them describe really what it is that they have done and how they'd like to see it continue. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate it. I will turn it over to Tom Fisher.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Poppy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Fisher. I direct the Minnesota Design Center at the University of Minnesota, and I'm here with my colleague, Mary Vogel, who is a senior research fellow in my center and has been leading the Greater Minnesota Futures Pilot Project with several community partners and the Department of Employment and Economic Development staff in Southeast Minnesota. We're here to ask for your support for making this work available to more small Minnesota communities in Greater Minnesota by supporting this bill. We are pursuing a 21st century approach to economic development, leveraging the human, cultural, and natural resource assets of communities and building on those assets to attract and retain younger people and to create economic opportunities. We use design thinking, a process that has fueled the success of many private sector companies and that we think is equally effective in the public sector and in communities that need to reimagine themselves in order to thrive in a highly mobile and competitive 21st century sharing economy. We focus on what makes each community unique and what assets it already has, and we build upon those. We are focused on communities under 5,000 population, which lack the staff capacity to do this work and to pursue government programs, to level the playing field so that they can compete effectively with larger cities that have more staff. We build upon existing programs and investments using a sharing economy approach that adds value and utilizes under-leveraged resources to meet community needs in as low a cost and as efficiently as possible. To build the capacity of communities to do this work themselves, we have one student from Spring Grove working there, and in the future we hope to engage many more post-secondary students from Greater Minnesota to work in their communities. We work in partnership with local leaders, elected officials, and community organizations to identify their assets that often communities overlook and tend to see as problems rather than as opportunities. We had an RFP, 14 communities responded, and we chose three different communities: Wabasha, which is a natural resource-rich river town; Spring Grove, an agricultural community with a lot of social capital and an artisanal community around it; and Grand Meadow, a growing suburb within commuting distance of both Rochester and Austin, surrounded by farms. Here today from Grand Meadow, I wanted to introduce Marty Walsh, who works for the Grand Meadow EDA.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Marty Walsh. I'm the director of the Grand Meadow Economic Development Authority, and I just want to comment on the value of the program. The Greater Minnesota Futures Project has been an excellent opportunity to take the tools and knowledge and assets of the state and the university system and leverage them against the assets of our local community. In essence, it's given us all the power of a top-down approach with the inclusiveness and proper direction of a grassroots approach with the local steering committee and prioritizing local projects. To highlight what I mean by the tools of the state, just the opportunity to be here today, learn of a number of partners who operate in southeastern Minnesota that I wasn't aware of, that I'm going to reach out to after today, and having staff here in St. Paul working statewide, having worked on projects statewide, has been invaluable. We have fantastic staff that work for DEED and DOT and other state agencies down in southeastern Minnesota, but we have the same people in every community on every project year after year. It's a small team who do an excellent job, but if a project isn't in their focus, their wheelhouse, it can be difficult to get a new idea sometimes, and that's just the nature of the number of people who we serve and the way things have to operate. So connecting to the entire state entity has been a fantastic project. I think a lot of communities would value for more cross-state pollination and just the additional resources. I work one day a week, and there's only so much that I can do as a professional. So, again, I personally, from the city of Grand Meadow, we hope that you support this bill.
Thank you.
And then I have one final testifier as well. So Mary Vogel will be able to talk about the other capacity building within the other communities.
For the record, I'm Mary Vogel from the University of Minnesota. Our project has been working in Wabasha. The development strategy that we have developed is Wabasha as an active living river town. One of the projects that we are working with right now is to develop a medically based technical program in the high school. Wabasha is facing a challenge with their hospital. It's the largest employer in the city, and Mayo has withdrawn from it. So by partnering with Minnesota State, St. Elizabeth's Hospital, and the high school, we hope to strengthen the hospital, strengthen the high school, and provide workforce for this very important employee. It's the largest employer in the state, in the city of Wabasha. The lead that we're working with is a school board member who has worked in a charter school in the Twin Cities that had a technical program. We're also working on infrastructure issues with Highway 60. Right now, there's a very dangerous situation. Cars have been coming off the bridge and hitting the fence at the athletic field. There's a fear that there may be a truck someday that goes by, comes through the fence, and kills many people who are participating in the athletic field activities. By just moving the highway two blocks, we improve a very dangerous situation, improve the recreational system, and also create more valuable developable land within the city. We're also looking at interconnecting many of the existing amenities and assets in the community. Wabasha has 80,000 tourists that visit the Eagle Center annually. However, it hasn't taken advantage of this economic opportunity. So we're creating a circulation system, an app that connects all the existing resources. Our partners include CHIP, which are promoting healthy living and recreation within the community, and employers that in Wabasha, many, many of the employment centers are dispersed. We are also working with Spring Grove. We are partnering not only with the economic development staff that works there 2 days a week, but with the Southern Minnesota Initiative Fund that has an entrepreneurial project in that community. I would like to enter in the record a letter of support from the mayor of Wabasha and the Southeast Minnesota Initiative Fund. But actually, when it all comes down to it, this is about working with people to create more value from existing resources and access existing programs to make communities good places to live and work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Poppy, would you make any final words before I open it up to questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no additional words to state.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifier? Any questions? I've done a little bit of homework on your particular project, and you have done a good job with your three, and you've got a good reputation down there. Hope we can fit you in. We are laying your bill over for possible inclusion, so thank you so very much. And we'll
thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, thank you.
Are there any dairies down there, by the way?
Pardon me?
Never mind. People will understand that joke a little later. Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson, I'm trying to keep everybody to 10 minutes, so please proceed.
I'll is that 10 minutes per year of service, sir, or is that?
No.
Oh, I misunderstood.
No,
okay.
I did hear there was something like that last year at the retirement speeches where someone went a little long.
I'll be happy to do that. if I'm a little bit disheveled, I just realized
that you didn't give me enough money in my budget?
Well, I think we put in enough to cover this one. I will move
House file.
Mr. Chairman, in light of the 10 minutes time frame, this is improving on and providing funding for a bill that we passed in 2014, if I recall. And it's providing a system where we use the Bureau of Mediation Services and have a three-person panel. If you have an unfair labor practice, to use that process rather than going through the courts, which is much more expensive and often much longer drawn out. So I have two testifiers here. We haven't had a chance to confer as to who goes first, but in light of the 10 minutes, I prefer that they walk you through the importance of the bill.
Thank you. And I'll move your House file 769 for possible inclusion. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I am the current chair of the Public Employment Relations Board. The board was created in 2014, legislative session, to process and decide charges of unfair labor practices under the Public Employment Labor Relations Act, or PELRA. The board is made up of three members and three alternate members. It was initially allocated $125,000 as part of its creation to become operational and develop rules. We have done that. Now we're at the point where, in order to actually conduct business, the board will need additional resources. It will not be able to function on the or fulfill its statutory mandates with the budget of $125,000. So members of the board ask this committee to support the appropriation in this bill, which is an additional $435,000 per year above the base funding. The members believe that this budget is necessary to cover the anticipated costs mandated by the statute. We'll need to hire staff and contract with hearing officers for hearings over unfair labor practice charges that warrant a complaint. And in order to keep my words short, I'll end there. But thank you for the opportunity to address the committee, and I can answer any questions that the committee has.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My name is Jonathan Bone. I represent the InterFaculty Organization. We represent the state university faculty within the Minnesota State College and University System. I'm also here representing a broad coalition of public employee unions. And in an effort to keep it short, I'm going to read the list real quick and then and finish our testimony. Our coalition partners include the Law Enforcement Labor Services, Education Minnesota, Minnesota AFL-CIO, AFSCME Council 65, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees, Minnesota Nurses Association, Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005, International Union of Operating Engineers Local 70, the IFO, Middle Management Association, Minnesota School Employees Association, AFSCME Council 65, Teamsters 320, Laborers, Minnesota North Dakota, SEIU, Minnesota Government Engineering Council, and more. And these groups support the full implementation of PERB because ULPs have been inadequately enforced for too long, and PERB will fix that. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers or the author of the bill? Any questions? Well, I will comment that it's about time we fund you and get you working to make life simpler for both the state and employers and employees. So. Thank you so very much. I will renew my motion to lay your bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you. Representative Zahn, we have been waiting patiently.
Oh, not a woman.
Not me.
I understood that.
Do I have a bill? I know I have a bill.
Well, we got to keep him on his toes. I gave him sugar to get him a little weight, you know.
Oh, that represents Zong. I didn't know there were two Zongs in the house.
Oh, yeah, the nonprofit assistance. I will move your House File 2580 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mahoney and members of the Jobs and Economic Development Finance Committee. I just have some treat. This is my first hearing here, in the Jobs Committee. I am the other Zhang in the House of Representatives. I have here today is House File 2580, which is a bill relating to economic development. This bill seeks to appropriate $500,000 each year for fiscal year 2020 and 2021 towards the Nonprofit Assistance Grant Fund. This fund encompasses grants for infrastructural support to small nonprofits, organizations that serve historically underserved cultural communities. The fund in the past has supported 21 grantees in 2018, organizations ranging from the Family Values Life for Life to the Latino Lead and others like the Northern Eagle Federal Credit Union in northern Minnesota. Minnesota is a state that seeks to ensure that fair and just inclusion of all Minnesotans into society so that all can participate, prosper, and reach their full potential. And I have with me Ms. O'Connell that can speak a little bit more to the bill.
Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maureen O'Connell, and I have been working with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders on this issue, and I'll turn it over to Tai Ying, who just came in.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney, members of the committee. I apologize for running a little bit late.
For several years now, we've been working with, my name is Gan Ying Yang. I'm the Director of Programs and Partnerships for the Coalition of Asian American Leaders. For several years now, we've been working with a coalition of more than 40 organizations. We've been running to ensure that equitable resources are also reaching nonprofit organizations that are relatively small, but also serving the most impacted communities. And as you can see from the Propel Nonprofits, this is a competitive grant program that we worked with the Propel Nonprofits. At that time, it was called the Nonprofit Assistance Fund. They've changed their name since then. And we had over 133 organizations that applied for this funding, totaling $7 million. So you can see that there's a large demand for this type of support. And as you all know, Minnesota is home to 7,000 registered nonprofits, with small nonprofits making up 70% of the total. And I don't know if Representative Xiong said this, but Minnesota's nonprofit sector employs 11.5% of the state's workforce. This is very important. And about 85% of the state's nonprofits are engaged in community services that provide support to low-income individuals with families. And nonprofits of all types and sizes are essential partners to local and state agencies and to the business community. So I'm here to support Representative Xiong's bill, and I urge all of you to support as well. And I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Are there any questions for the testifiers? Any questions for the testifiers? Would anybody care in the audience care to speak for or against this particular bill? Would anyone care to speak for or against the Lieutenant Governor's favorite bill? Would anyone care to Representative Zong, do you have any final words?
Trying to keep it.
Song? Well, we'll get a question in here first.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Dr. Zhang, for carrying this bill. And to Kai Ying Yang, I know of your work with the Coalition of Asian American Leaders, and I'm proud to be supporting this bill, especially when we talk about addressing disparities within the communities. I think this bill does that, will help address some of the concerns that we have in the community, and I look forward to working with all of you to make sure we get this bill moving forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative John, for the words. And just keeping it sweet and short, like you mentioned earlier, the Lieutenant Governor have worked on this bill in the past, and we're looking to keep the conversation going, and we look for your support for this bill and to help these Minnesota nonprofits. Thank you.
Thank you. I will comment that it's hopefully you're using some of these monies in these nonprofits to upgrade the accountability of mm-hmm. what you're doing and how you're doing it mm-hmm. and what your success rates are mm-hmm. because we spend a tremendous amount of money and we get very little feedback on what's actually being accomplished. So I'm looking forward to that. And next year, again, as I said yesterday, that we're going to try and figure out how to do more accountability right requirements, and this is a good opportunity for you to get ahead of the curve.
Yes.
And your organizations, and I've heard good things about what you've done. So with that, I will renew my motion for House File 2580 to be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much.
Representative Siegel. Do you have some testifiers on this particular bill?
Just one.
I've only heard about it once or twice so far this year.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move that House File 2446 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you.
So I will be brief. House File 2446 creates a special education employment program. What this would do would allow nationally accredited Minnesota-based non-governmental rehabilitation organizations to be authorized to contact special education students or graduates who want regular jobs, give them necessary training to be ready to work and be integrated in community settings, help employers get ready for successful
successfully employing the special education grads and then match specific grads to jobs suited for them. And so this would be a paper for performance program. So when the grads have their new jobs after 90 days, then the placing organization would collect on the funds. So with that, I will turn it over to Wise Pano.
Good morning. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Wise Pano. I'm here representing Opportunity Services, at an organization that helps Minnesotans with disabilities find jobs integrated into the community, jobs that pay at least a minimum wage. If members will look at that fact sheet that just got passed around, focus specifically, if you would, on the red part, the bar on the first page. That chart represents statistics on the numbers of persons with disabilities who, despite those disabilities, have regular, at least minimum wage jobs in the community. As you can see, Minnesota is 42nd out of 50th in this ranking. So what? Well, for one thing, it's expensive. The federal government 5 years ago established pretty firm policy that they won't support most disability spending that isn't clearly aimed at maximum inclusion. Minnesota used to be able to take special education graduates and place most of them in segregated settings. Now, however, the feds won't share the costs for segregated settings for any but the most severely disabled young people. That means we can't afford not to conform with the national policy and help the majority of our young people with disabilities quickly find regular jobs. So the fact that we're near the bottom in terms of people with disabilities being integrated into the workforce, that fact is hurting us quite a bit financially. There's something else, though, that I need to say. Opportunity Services isn't supporting this bill because it could save the state some money. 38 years ago, before my author was born, I testified in front of this same committee, representing the same client whose then very young leader had already developed her strong, lifelong belief that, to the maximum extent possible, people with disabilities ought to be integrated into the community. She can't be here today, but way back then she taught me that the sanest, most humane, most caring way to treat people with disabilities was to treat people with disabilities just like you do everyone else. Do together this thing called living. Back then in the early 80s, hers was a novel idea. In 1990, though, the U.S. passed the Americans with Disabilities Act, excuse me, making inclusion of the disabled our national policy. A few years later, the book No Pity became an early Bible of the disabilities rights movement. That book has half a chapter on this woman I'm referring to, Nancy Gurney, the president of Opportunity Services, whom the author lauds for her work getting people with disabilities into the regular job market. It's been an honor working with her in this cause. I left lobbying in 2001 and went into education, but she came to visit each of the cohorts in the program I started. And I shouldn't taint her with this, but the author of the bill actually went through this program. So I really appreciate it.
You can blame why for me being here.
But Nancy came to visit each of the classes, because we attempted to teach advocacy and political leadership at the graduate level. She was one of the best advocates I knew. She cared about people with disabilities, but she wanted them to be part of our family. When I retired, she asked me to work for her again, and that's what brings me here today. The problem we're working on, it's the one featured in the chart. Minnesota's fallen behind in making people with disabilities a vital part of our state's family. Consider this. In 2017, 6,000 young Minnesotans graduated from special education. Opportunity Services estimates, and it is only an estimate, but we estimate that about 4,000 of those 6,000 could actually hold and enjoy and want to hold a regular job. We also estimate that less than 500 of those 4,000 graduates actually obtained regular jobs. Each year, the lines forming at VR and in front of special programs to get certain persons with disabilities into jobs gets longer and longer and longer. So what happens to people who leave special education but don't get a job? The graduate spends a couple years without a job and often eventually loses interest in having a job. There are lots of programs around to help graduates, but now that they've been out of school for a time, it's really difficult to get them re-energized. In our considerable experience in this field, the longer a person with disabilities waits to get a job in the regular job market, the less likely he or she is to ever get a job. So how are we going to help special ed grads get jobs first? We're going to have to recognize this very simple fact. Most special education graduates not only can and want to get jobs, they would like to be like other high school grads they see around them. Also, many businesses need good employees and are willing to hire people with disabilities. Unfortunately, we don't seem to believe that special ed grads can do and want the jobs businesses are willing to give them. We focus our policymaking on fixing the barriers we think we see. Our take is different. Let's just accept that young Minnesotans with disabilities can and want to do regular jobs and that businesses need them and want to hire them. Then let's get on with it. This is our plan.
To the witness, I'm going to try and keep you on track here because you've got 2 minutes and two questions so far. So
okay. Well,
you got a good program, and we should support it?
Right.
All right. Representative Robbins, you had a question?
I do, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Thank you for being here, and this program sounds fantastic. I just have a concern about the broader situation. So my nephew has special needs. He went through a program post-high school that was supposed to do some job training, run through, I believe, the Department of Education through our intermediate school district. 3 years in this program that was supposed to be helping him with things like resume and job skills and all this. It was called Vector. He called it Vector Traz. He felt like it was the biggest waste of time. He felt confined. Their programs, I could give you more detail later, but they were completely unhelpful and, as you said, dispiriting to him. Meanwhile, he was able to get employed at the local Home Depot, and he has been working there, I believe, 5 years. He loves his job. It gives him so much meaning and confidence, and people affirm him. He loves the customers. He is beloved there. He's won 2 employee awards. And but that was all done outside of this program. And actually, there seems to be barriers. He would like to work full-time, and because of limits on his ability to earn income because of other state programs, he cannot work as much as he would like. And so the other times, you know, he's forced to stay home when he could get hours. They need employees at Home Depot. He could get hours. He's very capable in the job he has, but there are other limits. So I would just like to ask for, I guess, a more holistic approach, because this seems like a great program. Personally, I think, I don't know who these providers are. I hope they do a good job, but it seems like there are plenty of providers out there trying to do work readiness for students with disabilities, but maybe somehow providing a tax credit for businesses that hire these students might more quickly get them into employment. So I would just like to maybe offer to meet later to talk about this, but I'm a little concerned that just another program with a lot of more options for training might not really make a difference. Certainly, the program my nephew went through was unhelpful.
Mr. Chair,
briefly,
Representative Robbins, this program puts $5,000 on the table and says to the provider, find the kids, find the employers, put them together, then you'll get paid after it's all worked and done. So it's not like creating a program where you begin to teach people stuff they don't need. The providers are invested in getting this done right, and as a consequence, this pay-for-performance attitude is one that sweeps away the problem of the bureaucracy now kind of doing more and more and more and more to justify the things going on and all the regulations and all the rules. We're trying to get over all of that. Just say, kid wants a job, let's find him a job.
Seeing no other questions. I will renew, you can renew your motion.
I will renew my motion that House File 2446 be laid over for possible inclusion.
We'll see what we can do.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I don't see Representative Mariani, so I am next on the agenda after he. I'll do that. I'm going to do that from here because it's a very, very simple bill. And then if Representative Mariani is not here by then, I guess I will try to... Oh, all right. Representative Stevenson will step up. My bill, House File 2622, I will move it for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. What this bill does is call for a biannual report on our all the programs that we fund. What do they do? What do they do and where are they? Where they're located? Give us some information about what we're funding beyond just having a legislator and a lobbyist show up and say that this money is needed for this particular program. The last report was done 15 years ago or better by Representative Gunther. And it came out that there was 160 nonprofits doing job training across five different agencies. And I didn't recognize most of them. So I think this is good for our committee to start to understand the totalitarian of the issue here, of how many we fund and what we do and what they do. So with that, I will answer any questions that people may have. Seeing none, I will move House File 2622 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Representative Stevenson, I think you're up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I would move House File 2341 for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 2341 is not my bill, but I'm very pleased to be a co-author of it. It helps address a workforce shortage that the hospitality industry is experiencing. I heard firsthand about this from a constituent of mine who owns Clive's up in Champlain, which I highly recommend. It's a fine establishment, and they are in desperate need of some further workforce help, and I think this bill could be very helpful to them. So I'm very pleased to support it, very pleased to pinch it today, and would turn it over now to the experts.
Who would like to start? Please proceed.
I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, and to members of the committee, good morning to you. My name is Liz Raymer. I'm the president and CEO of Hospitality Minnesota, and our organization represents over 2,000 businesses throughout our state representing the hospitality industry. Also under our umbrella is the Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation, and this is an organization that promotes two very successful school curriculums to advance Minnesota's hospitality industry. The ProStart program provides a combination of classroom learning and real-life work experience in hospitality, preparing young people for careers as restaurant owners, managers, chefs, and other positions. The Hospitality and Tourism Management program covers the front office, housekeeping, management, marketing, sales, food and beverage, as well as general management leadership skills. ProStart is currently offered in over 60 Minnesota high schools, with 12 schools teaching the Hospitality Tourism Management Program. The Hospitality Minnesota Foundation has awarded over $700,000 in grants. However, we receive more requests for funding support than we and curriculum than we have financial support to give. So additional financial support is needed to meet the demand of these new schools and participants that wish to join the program, as well as supporting the current schools in need of teacher training and curriculum upgrades. A state investment of $250,000 in grant money would provide an individual grants to 50 schools of up to $5,000 each in order to cover the costs associated with curriculum purchases, teacher training. This investment would serve as a helpful accelerator and provide thousands of students to enter the workforce trained and ready to succeed in Minnesota's hospitality industry. Today, I'm joined by a ProStart teacher, a ProStart alumnus, and a board member from the Hospitality Minnesota Education Foundation who will share their comments about how important this program is in providing workforce-ready education. Our first speaker is Joshua Wolboat, who is a graduate of a ProStart program and a shining example of the results of this program. Joshua was named the 2018 Charlie's Award Rising Star. This is given to an under 30-ish up-and-coming food service professional whose talent and hard work guarantees that he or she will make their mark in the Twin Cities community and go on to even greater contributions. He's currently serving as the chef de cuisine at the very popular and very busy Lat 14 restaurant in Golden Valley. Joshua.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee. My name is Joshua Wobbles. Like Liz said, I am the chef de cuisine of Lat 14 Asian Eatery, also the executive chef and owner of Unity Minnesota, and a former ProStart alumni. So I'll talk a little bit about my experience with ProStart. I competed 2 years in the ProStart culinary competition and management competition as well. We won state both years from Elk River High School. And then I continued on my education at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Since then, I've come back to Minnesota to kind of work with my former mentors from the program. Alex Roberts from Restaurant Alma was one of the mentors that guided me throughout the career and continues to guide me today as I continue my education, continue learning and growing in the industry. Currently, as Liz Rammer said, I was just awarded the 2018 Charlie Awards for Rising Star Chef. Back in 2016, I was nominated top 10 young chefs in the U.S. for San Pellegrino. I go back to my foundation, which was the ProStart. It guided me through my career. It taught me the fundamentals of education. And when I got into culinary school, it allowed me to be in the top of my class and just continue to build the mindset for in my head is to become a chef and to keep pushing. Thank you very much.
Time for one more testifier. We'll see what we can do.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Marilyn Fagerness, and I'm a retired educator from North Branch Area High School. I retired last June. The last 4 years of my career, I did have the opportunity to teach the ProStart curriculum, and I can honestly say it was one of the highlights of my career. Reason being that the ProStart curriculum is a rigorous curriculum that provides students with transferable skills and skills certification. It does correlate with STEM initiatives as well. It was just thrilling to provide the students. A key component of this program, however, is the mentorship and working with professionals in the field, which is difficult to do just in the classroom. You get the kids out there or the chefs come in. It's wonderful. Funding for this initiative would allow districts to provide teachers with training. We're taught how to educate, not necessarily how to run a commercial kitchen or introduce students to those skill sets, which are tremendously needed in Minnesota, with the hospitality industry being, what, the second employer in the state. The curricular needs also, as more schools attempt to come on board with ProStart. So, thank you.
Thank you. I know you have a fourth person up there, but we're out of time, so I apologize. Representative, are there any questions from the committee? Any questions from the group? I have one for the chef. Do you prefer to cook with electricity or with gas?
Gas is always more fun, so.
You should take that back to the Energy Committee today, sir. Having said all that, I will move. Why don't you renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I remove my motion that House File 2341 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus.
We will see what we can do. Thank you. And before we go to the committee members, we're pretty close on the big dollar figures on the budget. Is there an interest in getting a briefing on it prior to it being released on Monday?
Yeah.
All right. You will get an email if it doesn't come, if it's not out already.
You'll have to do it separately.
Yeah, I can't do it. I have to do it with GOP and DFL.
Otherwise, we're in an open meeting law. Yeah. So we'll separate it out.
So. You'll get an email. Please look for a time from Michael. Look for a time. And if you can't make that, I will make every effort to kind of go over it with you individually. But. We all are getting closer and closer on time limits, so appreciate it. With that, 30 seconds from the
it's a very,
almost past CA.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's very unorthodox, but I appreciate the time. I just want to say I shared the nice words of support that you all gave with my wife, and she's very appreciative. This is probably my last committee meeting this year, although I'm knocking on wood, who knows. But I look forward to reporting back in 3 weeks with pictures and stories and all those good things. So thank you again for your support. It means the world to my wife and I. So thank you.
Yeah, he'll look a lot different in 3 weeks. We are adjourned.